This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to your window into the meaningful impact being made across the Catholic Diocese of Hamilton. I'm your host, Marion Green, and I invite you to join me as I talk with inspiring guests and explore how the Catholic Development Fund creates ripple results. In today's episode, I'm joined by the head of the Catholic Diocese of Hamilton, Bishop Richard Lawrenson. Welcome, Bishop.
Thank you very much.
As we discussed, we're excited to share with our listeners the incredible ways in which funding from the Catholic Development Fund, the CDF, is making in our diocese. This is not just information for our existing investors and account holders, but also an invitation to potential investors seeking a faith-based and socially moral and responsible investment that can make a meaningful impact. Bishop, as you near the second anniversary of your ordination, I'm eager to hear about your experiences during this time. But just before we delve into that, I'd like to take a moment to discuss your life prior to becoming a bishop. Can you tell us a bit about your early days, how long you've been a priest, and anything else you'd be happy to share about your journey to priesthood?
Oh, certainly. My journey to priesthood has been fairly unusual. It doesn't follow a traditional trajectory, if you like, or someone taking time out working, deciding to hear a call, and then coming, offering themselves for formation. I felt a call early on in my life, and it's been a steady situation ever since, such that I entered the seminary when I was straight out of school, spent 3 years in the seminary, took 2 years out where I actually worked for Hamilton City Council, and then went back into the seminary for a second round and got ordained from there. Because of my unusual way of doing things, I don't have a standard story to tell. However, the Lord himself has given me quite a few experiences and a new understanding of how really church is church, and because of my unusual way of doing things. So early on in my career, when I was a priest, I was asked to join the military as a chaplain. And as a chaplain, I deployed twice out to Bougainville and to East Timor. And they gave me a very specific experience of the church and her movements there and the way that we interact with people who need us regardless of situation, from the soldiers, who some of you who don't have any faith, through to the countries we're in, which were both very Catholic and dependent very much on the church to give structures to build and bring peace. So that's formed a large part of my whole way of doing things, this idea of working outside systems necessarily or finding ways to work within other institutions to bring the good news to people. Now, part of that being coerced into military has given me an attitude that, okay, we'll make things work. I was coerced in by Father Frank Scott, who used to be the hospital chaplain here. He rose to be the principal chaplain of army when he was in the army himself, and he told me it would be good for me.
Right.
So, you know, okay, sure. And so it proved to be the case. And so often when we have people who we trust and love giving us advice, it sometimes pays to follow that advice and trust in that.
Absolutely.
So that's the first part of my life. The second part took place when I was about 38. The bishop of the day, Bishop Brown, asked me to go to Rome to study canon law, which is one of our specialties in the church, how we actually structure ourselves and govern ourselves and the rules to prevent all sorts of abuse and bits and pieces. I was sent to Rome, had to learn Italian. I was 38, 39. It hurt the brain. Literally hurt, to learn a new language and then to study in it and do exams in it and all those things. But that opened me to a whole new way again of experiencing the church and her largeness, shall we say. Mm. It was made possible by donations from Germany and America that fund a scholarship that allowed me to go there and study at a basic no cost to the diocese. Huh. And that's a really important aspect that people often forget about. There's a lot of generous people who give in ways that people would not know necessarily, that allow mission countries, of which we are one, to actually further education and grow the church in our local areas. So that was the last half of my life as a priest, coming back home and doing the canon law things that we need to do. And part and parcel of that, I was helping in the management of the diocese, whereby we do things like being a vicar general or doing the marriage papers, bits and pieces, people to get married, as well as on the other side as a lawyer, people who go for annulments and things like that. And again, the costs for those things are actually quite high. The church itself pays for most of that and can only do that through the generosity of our people who fund us and give us money to do these things.
So just going back a step there, you went to Rome only speaking English? Or had you done Italian before
No. Self-taught, sort of like one of those early language talks where you stick in a CD, listen to it, and that's it.
Right.
Basta, yeah.
And then even all your learning and your exams were in Italian?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow, that's quite a journey, isn't it?
It's different. It's different. Apart from the Latin. Oh, no, that was in Italian too. So I couldn't use English to translate the Latin. It was straight into Italian. So that's
right.
Fun.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm. And so you're now a qualified canon lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those are there in the country?
Qualified lawyers, probably 10 maximum, six of whom are priests and the others are laity.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so there are people with a law degree who go off and add that to their qualification?
No, there's a theology degree, actually. That's the first criteria, to have a degree in theology before you do law.
Right.
For us, because for us, canon law is a branch of what it means to be church, what we call ecclesiology. So that's a requirement.
Right.
There are a couple of civil lawyers who have become canon lawyers as well, but they've had to do a bachelor's of theology in between.
Wow. Mm. Okay, good to know. Thank you. Sharing that with me. So you're listening to The Ripple Effect, your inside look at how the Catholic Development Fund turns investment into impact. I'm your host, Marion Green, and I'm joined today by Bishop Richard Lawrenson, who is kindly sharing with us some insights into his role as the Catholic Bishop of Hamilton, including how funding from the CDF helps enable his work within the Hamilton Diocese. So now we know a little bit more about your background. Now that you've been in the role for almost 2 years, can you share with us what an average day in the life of a bishop looks like?
Well, as I said, I'm not average. So my day starts with feeding the cats.
Right.
That's the first thing, you know, they've got to be fed. And so Josephine, who's been with me for 11 years now, she needs to be fed. Spend time in prayer. And reflection and particularly praying for the people of this diocese and praying that I be a good bishop for them, praying for my priests and in specific prayers for people who I've said I'd pray for. And then often the rest of the morning after coffee is taken up with paperwork, mostly reading. And, you know, just for example, this week I have 60 pages of our new lectionary to read through. We have 110 pages of the first set of minutes or stuff for the Bishop's Conference, which I'm going to next week. I have usually board meetings for Caritas Aotearoa New Zealand, which I'm a part of as a bishop, and then Te Kupinga, which is our tertiary institution. I'm a board member for that too. So all of those things come together. Lots of reading needs to be done, and often in short time frames. So power through that.
So a bit of academia in there, and people probably don't appreciate that quite so much, you know. They think of the bishop as the person in church.
Yeah. I'm finding the real role of a bishop is to do the background stuff to make it possible for the priests and the deacons and the other people who are working within the church for the church to be successful.
Right.
And so there's a lot more of the background strategic stuff that no one ever sees until it falls apart.
Of course, yeah.
And so keeping that going is actually, I think, firstly the main role of the diocesan staff and my role as well. And again, because it's hidden, no one really wants to pay for it. And so one of the things that we do is have the CDF, which allows us to be free enough to do all that unseen, costly work that makes the front of house, in our case the parishes, effective and capable.
Yes, something, as you say, a lot of people are, or most people are unaware of.
Mm, yes. Well, why would they know? It's not something, it's not sexy enough to advertise, frankly.
This is true.
And so it's very hard to know how to go about that. And that's one of the unique things of the Hamilton Diocese. For a long time, every diocese had this CDF and they used it for their funding. But when the government changed the law with in terms of trafficking and money laundering and everything else, it became very hard to do. But Hamilton continued to run its CDF and comply with the rules so that we could actually have this funding to make it all work. And that's really a great benefit to the diocese. We need the CDF to provide us a cash base so that we can invest it in a really good area and from that extra investments effectively pay the budget that does our pastoral work around the diocese. And that's what people... it's hard to note. It's very hard to write down. But the extra interest that the CDF gains for us pays for so much stuff that goes straight into the parishes without costing the parishes and therefore the people to do this thing.
Yes, and I guess as a CDF manager, part of my role is to try and educate people on that a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's we're not asking people to give us the money.
No.
They would, if they want to, that's wonderful. But we're talking about people who have a little nest egg put away, perhaps, mm-hmm. Or they've come into some money, whatever, and we're asking them to invest it with the CDF and let the CDF essentially have the interest.
Mm.
Their money is going to come back to them when they need it. We do pay a little bit of interest. We're just asking for that sacrificial interest rate in case we're not able to pay you what the bank would pay you, which is generally the case. And that's the money that accumulates and allows us to make a distribution to you, the bishop, every financial year.
Yes, yes.
So I think that's a misconception that I'd like to really drive home, is that we're not asking for people to give us their money. We're asking them to let us have the use of it until they need it for whatever the plan that they have eventuates.
Yes, what I found with the CDF interest rates, it's not as sharp as the banks. But then there aren't any costs associated either. Usually the bank often claws some of that stuff back by having bank fees and this, that and the other.
That's right.
And then I've also found that the principal is always protected. The interest rates, when it's really bad, is still better than inflation or protects it from the inflation thing. So the capital is nearly always protected. And then there's interest on top of that.
That's right.
And then the difference between... what we offer as interest and what we invest ourselves is what actually runs half of my diocese. And it's running it in such a way that we can get people out to the corners and bring resources and expertise and support to our people who are trying very hard to bring Jesus to others.
Yes, they're at the coalface doing the Lord's work. Yeah. That's wonderful. So we've talked a bit about your day. After you've had your coffee, fed Josephine, done your readings, where are we at? Are you at lunchtime by now?
It depends on the day. Wander down into the diocese and deal with what's there.
Into the Chanel Centre, yeah.
Yes, and so, you know, that changes from day to day and... And it's often speaking with people and working with things through there. And sometimes once I get there, I'm stuck there till 5, 5.30, doing different things, and then back home or out doing stuff at night with different people. And that's Monday, Friday. The Saturday, Sunday is taken up with going to parishes and confirmations and things like that are what people traditionally associate with priesthood and people who are working for the church.
Mm. Yes, and they a special day for those children or young people who are being confirmed and you know, meet you and interact with you.
Mm, correct. Mm. Yeah.
So that all sounds reasonably okay. What about some challenges that you've discovered in your role as bishop? And maybe some joys.
Right. Challenges are an interesting thing to try to deal with, because a lot of the challenges are interpersonal and very deeply personal to other people. So saying, oh, this is a situation is kind of hard to know.
Mm.
One of the biggest challenges I have is being photographed.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I'm a lot more like Mother Teresa, who hated photos with passion.
Really?
I'm not a photographic person as far as I'm concerned.
I can relate.
So, yeah. So having photos taken is a bit of a torture. Personally, but I know why they're done, and I'm happy to have them with the kids and all that sort of carry on. It's just very hard to stay smiling during all that. But that's cool. Once, usually I see it coming, and it takes me a minute or three to get into the zone. But it's one of those things. So that's my biggest personal challenge.
Not something you find natural or you would do by choice.
That's right. Mm. Yes. In fact, I'd sooner be taking the photograph.
Yes.
Myself. So that's the sort of thing there. So that's one big challenge. The other challenge is all the reading I have to do. I used to read a lot, and now I have to read a lot, and it's nowhere near as enjoyable. So that's another challenge, making sure I get that done and not skip that through, because the information we get is important for the long-term strategic decisions we've got to make. Yeah.
And, of course, one thing we didn't cover in your day is you did mention your morning prayer, but you have other obligations to pray throughout the day.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And your Mass and
it
that
all
sort
happens,
of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's part of the morning prayer routine, bits right. and pieces. Mass is different because there are different days when I've got to go somewhere and say Mass, so it knocks out the morning routine slightly.
Right.
But that's the deal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, busy schedule.
Can be. It doesn't look busy, but because when you see, you know, there's a diary entry, you know, and it's usually at home reading through stuff. So it looks like the diary's empty, but it's a full day occupied and that sort of thing.
And know. I know from experience when you come into the Chanel Centre to where the staff is, you can be pulled in different directions unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And, you know, could spend hours with someone doing something you hadn't even planned on that day. So
that's regular. I come in with two things to do and I don't do either of them. Until I leave and go home and get time to do it. Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
In terms of the joys, confirmation is one of those things, RCIA, bringing people to faith, into the faith. That's when the church is truly church, properly church, when we're making new members, when we're and that starts from announcing the good news to people through to their initiation, becoming members of the church, and then pass that into the way that they are continually developed or educated or catechized, if you like. So all those things together suit me and are part and parcel of who that gives me joy and things we're supposed to do and what I like doing.
Anything else? The joy of coming to the Chanel Centre and seeing all those lovely people?
Yeah, something like that. the reason I go is because my main task is to keep my priests effective and happy, and the Chanel Centre is an integral part of that, focusing on that. And when my priests are effective and happy, the parishes are, and therefore the people are. And it's sort of that sort of role.
Mm.
It can sound a little top-down and hierarchical, but the reality is if we have unhappy priests and ineffective priests, then the whole thing falls apart.
Absolutely, I can see that, yeah. Mm. So what about, is there anything in your role that you wish people understood more? We've touched on the time that you spend that people don't see, because they might think, oh, I haven't seen the bishop around for a bit at church. Any other things that you wish they knew a little bit more about?
Well, that's effectively the real thing. I mean, 50% of my work is at the national level, which no one knows about really, because we just got to go do it, but that's all focused at the local level. So that the local parish school is only effective because of our national structures
right. And
our interface with government, and that sort of thing is a lot of our work. Right? So that's a big thing. That's why you don't see a bishop around a lot. I got really, as a parish priest, ticked off with Bishop Steve, who was never in. He was always doing something. And I knew why, but it still didn't help. And it's the case with me too. I understand that it's actually very difficult to be here all the time. In fact, we're not. We've got to do all the other bigger stuff to allow the local stuff to work. So that's probably the biggest thing.
So now you're in the role, you can appreciate what was happening when Bishop Steve was the bishop and you were a parish priest.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it anyway, it just didn't help.
Right.
That's the thing, it doesn't help when you want them and they're not there. It's just the way that is. And I know that's the case for me too. And I suppose the other thing is the thing I'd like people to know and understand is that just because there's an email doesn't mean there's going to be an answer in a hurry, because emails, people think an email requires an instant response. Sometimes the best response is after a week's thought.
And considered response.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the something else that's kind of important too.
Right. Okay. And I'm going to ask you, what is the most unexpected challenge that you've encountered so far? You know, one you just didn't even foresee, could not have possibly foreseen. Is there anything like that? That you've gone, wow, I didn't know this was part of this role, or I didn't think this was going to work out this way?
No, to be honest, not really. But that's partly because I worked closely with Bishop Steve and Bishop Dennis beforehand. So I saw a lot of that unexpected stuff happening.
Right, so you kind of knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I still said yes. Anyway.
And what about spiritual fulfilment? Do you find that having stepped up into the role of bishop, it's giving you more spiritual fulfilment because you've got a wider view of the church in New Zealand?
I was happy as a parish priest. I really enjoyed the day-to-day of being a parish priest, meeting people, praying the Mass, looking after people and their needs. Most of that is not there as a bishop. So for me, the spiritual fulfilment comes from supporting my priests to do that and hearing their stories coming back when it's all successful and great. So there's that side of it. Personally, for me, and emotionally, I'm a bit of a steady eddy. So I don't have the highs and lows. Well, I have lows, but the highs are not so much. So for me, having the fact that my guys are at peace and generally happy is, for me, gives me a sense of contentment. And I guess if that changes, will be the hard work. But trying to have the priests and my deacons and the people too, all focused on promoting the Lord and bringing the Lord to others, that's the deal.
That's the deal, yeah. So what about you? Like, how do you balance the spiritual leadership role that you have with your own spirituality and well-being and your resilience among the demands of the role?
Well, it fits into with my own well-being that prayer is essential. And prayer is not necessarily a say your prayers things or have this time here. It's something that goes right throughout the whole day. And often you won't know it's prayer, but it's keeping the Lord in mind as we're doing things. So having that as a constant thing is the way I do that. Always been a priest who's tried to bless people's activity and only intervene when it needs to be corrected or redirected. So someone gets overenthusiastic, poke the enthusiasm some other direction. Rather than being someone who says it's got to come through me and I've got to approve everything and that sort of thing. So I'm a little more hands-off approach about things than some other people. So for me, I'm still that way where I'll do the big no's or the big yeses, but everything else in between, go for it. And if the Lord is on its side, then there's no point in me opposing it, and it'll succeed. If the Lord's not for it, it won't succeed, and it'll become obvious fairly quickly, and it'll fold itself up in many ways.
So I've often thought about the bishop as and the role maybe as a little bit of a lonely one. So, you know, you're the newest bishop we've mm-hmm. got in New Zealand, and you've joined a group of relatively young men. I had a look at the ages; they're pretty good,
I suppose.
Do you find there's a bit of a brotherhood there? Do you get support from each other? Do you share ideas? And
oh yes, we are well aware that as the bishops of the country and we're only six. We are in a unique position. No one likes to have a boss as their friend. Doesn't matter what the situation is, and that is a reality. And even though I've come up from this diocese, I've been a priest of Hamilton Diocese, and all my priests were my colleagues and my friends, and now there's a different relationship. It is not, well, it's not lonely, but it is in a lone position, and I think there's a fundamental difference. So we as bishops do support each other. We meet every fortnight and talk with each other, and we can ring each other up and we do those things. We gather together formally four times a year and do our meetings, and in there we support each other in different things too. And we are praying for each other in a special way because we all know what it's like. So all of that forms a support network for us, as well as our particular friends and people who do support us. In spite of necessary, there may be one of my priests who do support me directly in different ways. Eh? Having them around me is important, but I'm also a lone person. I don't mind my own company, and in fact, I think that's true for most of us as bishops. And so that's also helpful that we're not someone who's needing people around them all the time. Having that alone space is actually really important.
And, of course, I guess it's important to remember that before you were a priest, let alone a bishop, you were a son
mm-hmm.
and a brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got your family.
Yes, all that. Yep.
Which I'm sure plays a very important role.
Oh, it does.
In your being.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today, Bishop. It's been lovely to learn more about you and your role. Thank you for all that you do, and God bless you in your work.
Thank you. May God bless all those who hear this.
Thank you for joining us today on Ripple Results. Catch us next time when I will be talking with another inspirational guest about their role and aspirations made possible by the Catholic Development Fund. You can find us wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts, and if you wish to contact us, you can go to www.cdfhamilton.org.nz or give us a call on 07 85 66 989.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.